5, 1 a 2. 1 a 2, 3 a 5.
On the beach at Ipanema. This is what most people will imagine when they think of Rio. I'm Juliana Iotti and I'm standing here, my feet on the sand. I am surrounded by a sea of sun umbrellas. It's 2:30 in the afternoon, it's 34 degrees, it's really hot, and it's just the beginning of summer.
Alô, mate! Vai limonada, vai mate! É bem gelado, mate!
There are shrimps, coconuts, and everything you can imagine for sale in this beach here.
Very good, very nice, the best caipirinha in real time, very. Let's go, come on!
But this beach here, as well as Copacabana and so many others, were only accessible to the people of Rio when a tunnel was built through the mountains that was in 1892. Before that, there was a very different atmosphere in the colonial city, a settlement built on slavery and with a rigid sense of class. One 19th century writer managed to capture the spirit of this very different Rio in his novels, poems and plays. For the BBC World Service, I am here to find out about the life of an extraordinary Brazilian writer, hardly known outside his country. Maybe the greatest writer the world has never heard of, Machado de Assis.
He is the greatest Latin American writer of the 19th century and the greatest Brazilian writer of all time, there's no doubt.
He's amazingly ahead of his time, besides being a master in the use of language and a very subtle literary creator.
If this book please you, excellent reader, I shall be rewarded for my labour. If it please you not, I shall reward you with a snap of my fingers and good riddance to you.
I read him in school, maybe when I was 14 or 15.
Author Daniel Galera.
We were studying it, so felt like homework. And he wasn't one of the writers that really impressed me when I was very young. And then I went to read many of his books again when I was about 22. And then it really struck me as the great writer he is. I actually feel he portrays a very truthful kind of Brazil. Maybe it's not so related to some stereotypes that foreign readers and Brazilians too usually relate to Brazil, but I think his Brazil is at least as truthful as any of those, like Jorge Amado or Clarice Lispector, maybe even more. And he's a writer that, you know, inherited a lot from the modernists from outside of Brazil. So maybe that's the quality of his writing that may sound not Brazilian to foreign readers, but that's not true. I mean, he turns into something that is very Brazilian.
He was born in 1839 in Rio on a big estate, which was then on the outskirts of Rio, owned by an aristocratic lady, a widow of a minister.
John Gledson, an expert in Brazilian literature, now retired from Liverpool University.
He lived in Rio all his life, virtually never left the city, let alone Brazil. He left the city, I think, about four times on the railway. He was born in an interesting class of people, the so-called agregados, or the dependents. He was a dependent on a big estate, somebody who was protected by the rich widow who owned the estate and probably began his education with her.
His mother died when he was 10, and his father married again, and Machado was able to educate himself in the library of his rich protector, who was also his godmother. He started to work at the age of 15 in a printing house. At this time, he published his first known poem.
Claire Williams, Associate Professor of Brazilian Literature and Culture at the University of Oxford.
He also wrote plays, more than 200 short stories, 9 novels. He was a theatre critic. He did a little bit of translation. He contributed to many newspapers, and he wrote a lot of what are known as crônicas, which are kind of opinion pieces.
And it is right here, at Morro do Livramento, that Machado begins to observe the world around him. I'm standing at a small bar at Ladeira do Livramento, a very steep street. From here, I can see the bay, the bridge, the warehouses, the port, several colonial houses still peppering the streets. And it was from these cobblestone streets that Machado would also have watched the city of Rio beneath him, a city that was both backdrop and central character to his work. Machado was mixed race, what is described in Brazil as a mulatto. He was from a relatively poor family, as are many of the people that live here today at Morro do Livramento. It is a place full of run-down houses where families can live crammed together in tiny spaces. Like Charles Dickens in London, Machado was also observing the society around him.
I have a page from the Brazilian National Library here.
I'm with Nadia Kerechuk, official translator with the Embassy of Brazil in London, as well as a historian of ideas. Nadia, you're showing me a copy of a Brazilian newspaper where we can find a direct link between Machado de Assis and Charles Dickens, as Machado translated his work into Portuguese.
And then it says here, today starts the magnificent and long novel of this very famous Carlos Dickens, intitulado, and under the title, Oliveiro Twist.
What are the similarities that you would point out between the work of, if any, between the work of Dickens and Machado, if you find?
There are many similarities. The fact that both men had a great concern for the problems that society faced, the impoverished people, the people that had to do sort of very menial and degrading jobs, the tigres in Brazil, the tigers that carried the excretions from the rich houses to the beaches, etc. And Dickens, for example, with the children, with the prostitutes and things like that, you know, the people that were the underclass,
social
yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So they were always, so I always regard Machado de Assis as a social chronicler.
He published his novels in installments in the newspapers, and it was in 1880 that he started to write the first of his three masterpieces, the posthumous memoirs of Brás Cubas.
Memorias posthumas de Brás Cubas. To the first worm that gnawed my flesh. This is the work of a man already dead. I wrote it with the pen of mirth and the ink of melancholy. I am a deceased writer. Not in the sense of one who has written and is now deceased, but in the sense of one who has died and is now writing.
One of the things that I find so absolutely delicious to read is the elegant irony that
yes.
he has in his
yes.
text and in his observations.
Yes.
And so how do you think he stands in the pantheon of Brazilian writers?
Oh.
In terms of his style and the way he portrays what you just said, social injustice
yeah.
or just...
Yeah, he has this, he himself says, yeah, and you have, we had just had a reading, that he writes with the pen of mirth. And melancholy. He's melancholic because obviously when as he grew and he went to school, it was very difficult for him to be a child that was half-caste, perhaps, or mulatto, or black,
yeah.
whatever you
yeah.
want to call it.
Yeah.
And he didn't enjoy the privileges that the other children, so he had to go to school and learn and do the things.
Yeah.
And the fact that he developed a very fine, witty type of humor.
Chapter 49, The Tip of the Nose. Did you ever ponder the function of the nose, dear reader?
Machado de Assis was mulatto. His father was a house painter. And his mother was a Portuguese woman from the Azores, and that they were by no means rich. Just because she was an immigrant doesn't mean to say she was in any sense superior. So he had to fight his way up, and literature was a major part of that fight to succeed.
Portraits show that he was a light-skinned mulatto, but definitely of African descent, and this must have held him back in certain ways because society was so stratified, and yet being a writer, invisible, as it were, he did manage to reach lots of people.
The word mulatto means mixed race, and it's not a very polite word because it's connected to the word mule, and they were reputed to be miscegenation, that is, mixture of colours in a marriage, say, or in any kind of relationship, was regarded as not a good thing. and they were regarded even perhaps as sterile, as mules are.
His childhood was difficult, not only because of his humble background or of him being mixed race. It was difficult as well because Machado had epilepsy, a disease that at the time was surrounded by prejudice. In his writings, Machado reflects a society that he wasn't born into.
Rio was the capital at the time, so the court was based in Rio. And Machado was writing during and about a period known as the Segundo Reinado, the Second Reign, when Brazil was ruled by Pedro II. The country's economy was dependent on agriculture, coffee and sugar production, and the coffee and sugar and dairy barons were extremely powerful and able to put pressure on the government. The gap between rich and poor was huge, and Machado lived through big changes in Brazilian society, including the abolition of slavery in 1888 and the end of the monarchy and the coming in of the republic in 1889.
Brazil was the last country in the Western world to abolish slavery. And there were still, I think, 600,000 slaves in Brazil at that moment. I think a third of the Africans who were forcibly enslaved and taken across the Atlantic, a third of them, over the whole period of the slave trade, went to Brazil.
There was a census in 1872 of 10 million people, which found that 58% of the population was black or mixed race, but 15% of those were slaves, 38% were white, and 4% were indigenous. So there was a majority of black or African inhabitants, but they had no power.
The hill that he was born on, just outside Rio, then outside Rio, now towards the middle of Rio, was only a few hundred yards from the Valongo, which was the slave market. So he must have, when he was a young man, in the 1830s, when many, many slaves were being brought in from Africa, even though it was illegal, they were still being brought in huge numbers, he must have seen them being unloaded, being sold, all that, and it must have affected him.
More than a million African slaves were brought to the Valongo Wharf, or Cais do Valongo, as it's called in Portuguese. Here, from where I stand, you can see what remains of the Cais do Valongo. It was uncovered in 2011 during major excavation works in the city historic port area. This is part of the ongoing development project in the build-up to the Rio Olympic Games in 2016. From where I stand, I can see stone steps, a platform, just ruins, but it's the grim reminder of what happened here. Here in the past stood a busy market with shops where slaves would be displayed for sale. Slaves like two of Machado's grandparents.
Through the 19th century, it grew and grew and grew. The population of Brazil grew enormously, and at the end of the 19th century, this had made the city absolutely impossible. The city itself, for Machado, the city that he loved was the old city, the city with its variety, with its life. He said, "Todo mundo dança e ninguém se conhece." Everybody's dancing, but nobody knows one another. Avenida Brasil,
Caju, Vila do João, Parque União. The Rio de Janeiro that Machado lived in was a city in flux. There were huge social transformations sweeping the Brazil of slavery and empire in the late 19th century. But one of the most dramatic changes happened in the beginning of the 20th century, during the last years of Machado's life. It was the urban reform spearheaded by Mayor Pereira Passos, a project that completely changed the face of Rio. Inspired by the French Baron Haussmann, who built wide boulevards in Paris, Passos remodeled downtown streets and public spaces, building wide avenues like Avenida Rio Branco, where I'm standing now. The idea was to sanitize and modernize the city to make it look like Paris. But in order for that to happen, over 20,000 people lost their homes, the vast majority of them poor, and more than 1,500 buildings were destroyed. Amongst this turmoil of a changing city, Machado de Assis was himself introducing a new and very original style of writing. Author Ana Maria Machado.
No, I think he was the first one to do what then was called the magic realism, because The Epitaph of Small Winner is a story told by someone who is dead. It's a dead narrator who is telling this from somewhere, we don't know exactly when. And the book is dedicated to the first worm that ever ate his body. And there is also this humor and also this distance, which is very critical.
I expired at 2 o'clock on a Friday afternoon in the month of August 1869 at my lovely suburban home in Captain B. I was 64, sturdy, prosperous and single, was worth about 300 contos and was accompanied to the cemetery by 11 friends. Only 11.
My favorite is Memorias Póstumas de Brás Cubas, and that book is wildly funny. And it's a humor that hasn't aged one day since he published it. You can read it today and still laugh.
I'm beginning to be sorry that I ever undertook to write this book. Not that it bores me, I have nothing else to do. Indeed, it is a welcome distraction from eternity. But the book is tedious, it smells of the tomb, it has a rigor mortis about it, a serious fault, and yet a relatively small one. For the greatest defect of this book is you, dear reader. You want to live fast, to get to the end, and the book ambles along very slowly. You like straight, solid narrative, and the smooth style. But this book and my style are like a pair of drunks. They stagger to the right and to the left. They start and they stop. They mutter, they roar, they guffaw, they threaten the sky. They slip and fall. And fall.
This book has a kind of a pessimistic worldview that is quite unusual in Brazilian, you know, traditional writing literature, and that I really agree with. I mean, I have the same sort of slightly pessimistic views on human life.
If I had eyes, I would shed a tear of remembrance for you. And this is the great advantage of being dead, that if you have no mouth with which to laugh, neither do you have eyes with which to cry.
The fact that you will have a writer writing from beyond the grave is truly exciting, but he will surprise you at every change of chapter.
Chapter 136. And if I am not greatly mistaken, I have just written an utterly unnecessary chapter.
The way that he will narrate our lives, and we know how we tell the stories of our lives, and with Facebook we now have these timelines and everything. So this is a very sophisticated Facebook account from the dead.
Chapter 134. 50 years. I was 50 years old. 50 years. I fear that if any female reader has got this far, she will now shut the book and refuse to read the rest. 50 years. Not yet decrepit, but certainly not robust. Come 10 more, and I shall understand the significance of something that an Englishman once said. The problem is no longer to find someone who remembers my parents. It is to find someone who remembers me.
Machado de Assis worked as a civil servant, but it was his writing that took him to the very top, to the highest position any writer could have imagined. He became a co-founder and the first president of the Brazilian Academy of Letters. I am now just outside the headquarters of the Academy. It is an impressive neoclassic building, nowadays sandwiched by tall apartment buildings in a side street of the center of Rio. Ana Maria Machado was a president of the Academy herself.
Well, it was founded in 1897, following the model of the French Academy. So it's just like the French Academy in the sense that it has 40 members. The only way of getting in is when one of them dies and then the other can apply as a candidate, and is voted by the remaining members that choose among different candidates. And It's perhaps the oldest cultural institution in Brazil. His first president, the first president of the institution for the rest of his life. And when he died, it was a commotion in the city. It was one of the biggest state funerals ever.
When he dies, he's so well recognized and so respected by his contemporaries that he is accorded a state funeral, which is quite amazing if you think about it. If you think about Charles Dickens, he didn't have a state funeral.
Chapter 160, Negatives. This last chapter consists wholly of negatives. I did not achieve celebrity. I did not become a minister of state. I did not marry. At the same time, however, I had the good fortune of not having to earn my bread by the sweat of my brow. Adding up and balancing all these items, a person will conclude that my accounts showed neither a surplus nor a deficit, and consequently that I died quits with life. And he will conclude falsely, for upon arriving on the other side of this mystery, I found that I had a small surplus, which provides the final negative of this chapter of negatives. I had no progeny. I transmitted to no one the legacy of our misery.
That's one of the great ending sentences in world literature from any time, in my opinion. It's really, really good. That pessimistic view on human life is something that I think is very particular and intriguing about Machado de Assis.
What can something like literature tell us about a historical moment that oftentimes traditional archival sources can't?
Elizabeth Cooper is the curator for Latin American collections at the British Library in London.
Someone in particular, like Machado de Assis, will open up that historical imagination, I think, and will get at ethical issues, moral issues, social tension, the way that he gets inside his characters, his indigenous characters, his Afro-Brazilian characters in particular, are really revolutionary, I think, for the time and still for historians trying to grasp with all of the changes that happened in Brazil and the world in that century.
The reading of Machado de Assis is a way of looking of what Brazil was in the 19th century, like Brazilian society especially, and what of that society of slavery, the social life, the economy of the country, and how it is still persistent.
Hélio Guimarães is a professor at the University of São Paulo.
There is the festive Brazil, there is the celebration, and also the other parts. Like, it's a very violent society. It was one of the most violent societies in the world. So, and I think Machado had that perception. He shows us how violence can happen, like in a way that people don't perceive how violent that is. In the surface, everything looks good, but underneath, there's lots of force and violence and power going on.
He describes political corruption scandals, which are still unfortunately going on. The social hierarchy is still very stratified. There's still a huge gap between the rich and the poor, and often it corresponds to racial background. So the sort of the psychological insights that he brings out in his writing, these sort of things are eternal.
I'm going inside one of the main bookshops in Avenida Rio Branco now. I want to see if there are any Machado de Assis fans or enthusiasts, or if there are any of these books on display.
Machado tem uma seção só para ele nessa loja.
Aquela ali, né? Here is the place where the bookshop puts all of Machado de Assis' works. So there are books written by him, books about him. He is right below William Shakespeare's complete works and side by side with some of the biggest Portuguese language writers, poets and novelists. It's a very good place to be, I would say.
If you teach his literature at school and if it's not very well done, then the kid will create a kind of aversion to his work, because it's not easy.
Marta de Sena, researcher at the Casa de Rui Barbosa Foundation in Rio.
I think there should be a strategy. There should be a way of conveying the importance of Machado when kids are about 15, 16, 18 years old in what we call here in Brazil, ensino médio. Because I think that if you give Machado to be read to children of 12, 13, 14, as it was at my time, at first you don't like him. It's difficult. The language is difficult. But most of all, the implications are hard to grasp. He is so relevant for humankind that I even regret the fact that he's so little known outside Brazil.
Walking through the streets of Rio, Machado's city, seeing the area where he was born, talking to people and listening to what Machado meant to them, I was able to appreciate that the Rio of Machado is somehow, in its soul, the same Rio of today. I'll leave the last word to author Tatiana Salim Levy.
I would say he's an obligatory reading, but with pleasure, because usually when we say obligatory reading, we think about something very boring, and he's everything but boring. And now Brazil is growing, so people start to translate more from Brazilian literature, which is very good for us, of course, and for you.